And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I think that'll be the last time I say that last part for this broadcast, because it just gets a little long after a while. Oh, it's great to be here. It is absolutely one of the most beautiful days here on the Central Coast. I'm Richard Dugan, and we come your way every Saturday at this time. By the way, this is also the first broadcast following going off of Daylight Saving Time. I wish they would just leave it alone. I really do. It's really starting to annoy me that we have to move the clock forward, move the clock back. We bought an alarm clock a year ago that was pre-programmed to change the time at the old markers in March and October. And now they have lengthened daylight saving time. So now I have to change the time zone for 1 week to mountain time so that we stay at the correct time, or I come into work late. Oh, please, let's have some consistency here. Anyway, we're here from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. So no matter what time zone you're in, or whether you're a daylight or standard, it's the same time. We also stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. I do not know why I went off on that tangent, but I do know that I have a guest in studio, and we're going to be taking your calls at 866-564-1290 or 805-564-1290. My guest is our roving. She's not roving today.
No, I'm here.
Our assignment editor, if you will. I call you my astrological or astronomical assignment editor, Beth McDonald, who has a website, BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. I got it right. Woohoo! And we're going to be taking your calls this afternoon. She's going to be giving you a short little reading, and we're going to be giving you more information on getting in touch with her, as well as getting in touch with us and yourself, because that's really kind of the bottom line. As you and I have talked, and our guests have talked over the last 3+ years, that it's a question of listening to that still small voice inside, which is yourself, if you will, your higher self that's connected to the big self, and so on and so forth. I'm kind of in a strange mood because I spent about 2 hours at the mechanics sitting in the lobby talking with the owner, which was very nice, you know, but I still sat for 2 hours at the mechanic, and it does weird things to you after a while. But this is kind of fun. Here we are, the second Saturday already in November. We're almost halfway through. Monday, we're going to be halfway through this month alone.
Yeah.
And hurtling towards 2011. And obviously, the big thing is 2012.
Right.
December 21st. Now, before we go hurtling off into that realm, we have some interesting dates and periods. We have the solstice coming up. Beg your pardon. We have the winter solstice, that's right.
Yes.
Winter solstice coming up on the 21st. Now, it's not always on the 21st.
It's not, but it is this year.
Okay.
And
it is not only the solstice, it's a full moon.
Yes.
And
it is a lunar total eclipse. Lunar total eclipse, and of course, depending on whose ephemeris you're using, you may get different exact times and degrees, but it's when the moon is full in Gemini. I have here that that'll be 12:13 a.m. Pacific time.
Okay.
And then the total lunar eclipse is the same time. And then this eclipse is going to be visible not so much here, primarily in Eastern Asia, Australia, the Pacific. They're saying the western part of the Americas.
Okay. So we'll be able to see it here.
Hopefully. Early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, here lately, it so much depends on the fog.
Well, that's
you know,
right.
If it's raining, if it's foggy, you know, it's going to have an impact. And I am getting this from the Wee Moon calendar.
Okay.
Wee Moon 2010. But there's a gazillion different ephemerises out there, you know, and there's the whole sidereal method. And so, you know, I'm not trying to preach or change anybody's mind. Just pick one and stick to it.
Okay.
Said the Gemini. You know, that's my life lesson, so I may say that a few times.
Well, to me, it's fascinating. It's also on a Tuesday, for whatever that's worth. If it were on a Saturday or Sunday, it would be a little easier because, you know, we're on the weekend and what have you.
Yeah.
So, you know, early
it's
in the morning.
During the Mercury retrograde.
Didn't we just finish?
That's always.
Now,
I realize
I sound a little annoyed and like I can do anything about it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But explain to us about. First of all, explain to us about Mercury.
Oh, yes.
Then explain to us about this, we'll call it the phenomenon of retrograde, separating the two.
Yeah.
Then, sadly, merge the two and tell us about Mercury in retrograde.
Excellent question. Always start at the beginning. Mercury is the planet that rules how we think and how we speak. And so it's kind of an important one on a personal level. If your perceptions aren't clear, you have a hard time making good decisions. If your communication isn't clear, you can be making the best decisions in the world, but if you can't articulate it, if you can't get it across to people, you're kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so somewhere along the line, the ancients assigned different realms for each planet. And Mercury rules the realms of the mind, your thinking, your speaking. They also noticed that when the different planets appear at different times of the year, all the different planets that were visible appeared to go backwards. What we now know is that's an optical illusion. When a faster planet and a slower planet catch up together,
mm-hmm.
one of them will appear to go backwards. It doesn't really, but it looks like it. And back then, before they had telescopes, they really believed that it did.
Hmm.
And they also they named it from the Latin retrogradus or retrogradir. I'm not the Latin student, but I think that's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And they noticed that whenever a planet went retrograde, the things it was said to rule kind of got a little squirrely. And so when Mercury does go retrograde and it goes 3 to 4 times a year, usually what you notice is thinking and communicating becomes more challenged.
Okay.
And so I really always advocate, slow way down, ask clarifying questions, double check, use lots of sticky notes to leave notes for yourself, that sort of thing.
Well, now, wait a minute. Let me back up. What is retrograde? And I don't mean the definition. I know what Mercury is. It's a planet. But certain attributes have been assigned to it by, as you said,
yes.
the ancients.
Yes.
But what is something else that we can compare and contrast retrograde with in that same line of categories? Like we can take Mercury, we got Venus, Pluto, Mars, Earth, the Sun.
Right.
Those are compare and contrast. What can we compare and contrast with retrograde in the same genre?
Well, Venus, which is retrograde right now.
No.
Oh.
I'm talking about this phenomenon we call retrograde. Obviously, we can do Venus, Mars, Jupiter,
right.
retrograde. But what is retrograde? Mercury is to Venus as retrograde is to?
Direct. Yes.
So Mercury can be direct?
Yes.
Venus can be direct.
Yes.
So
and
now,
normally they are.
Okay.
They're going in their regular orbital pattern.
Where does retrograde come from? I don't mean origin, the Latin and anything. I'm talking about where is this energy coming from as opposed to the direct? Where is it coming from? We know where Mercury and its influence is in that context.
I really think it has to do with gravity.
Okay.
And planets coming within range of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw the sun in, you throw the earth in, and the different ways that these planets pull on each other.
Okay.
The moon controls the tides.
Okay.
That sort of a thing. I am not a physicist, and I don't know so much about that part as other people do.
Okay. Well, and again, we because to me, it's very important to understand those terms separately.
Right.
You've defined what retrograde is.
Yes.
But I still don't understand where it comes from. Who came up and or designed and or intuited that concept and then tied it to Mercury and Venus and all the other planets and so forth?
Yes. And that is an excellent question. And that is one that sadly is lost to history,
mm-hmm.
because most of astrology what we consider astrology started in the Mesolithic and the Neolithic age before there was writing back with cave paintings and
obviously before
and
my
that
time.
Sort of stuff. And what the perspective I have is astrology was the first science and the first religion, and at some point they were one. In the beginning, they were very, very closely united.
Okay.
And these ancient peoples noticed. The phrase that's bandied about a lot by old astrologers is as above, so below.
Okay.
You know, think about it. There's no television way back when. You're wearing deerskin clothes. You know, there's not a whole lot to do in the evening except, you know, or even in the daytime. You're watching the elements of your natural world, and you're trying to make correlations so that you can make good choices and figure out. It's always been about survival.
Yeah. The curiosity is to where this influence, as the same thing question with direct, came from. What is it that's putting it out there?
Right.
And, you know, obviously we can't stop it. It's going to happen. No. Somebody obviously discovered
recorded
it.
This.
They intuited, they were given the information.
Yeah,
they
handed noticed. It down.
Exactly.
One of the first ones, I believe, was Ptolemy.
Okay.
There were one of the first ancient astrologers that I find particularly interesting are some of the Egyptian kings.
Okay.
A couple of the Ramesses. You know, I think there were 14 different Ramesses, and a couple of them were very, very interested. You know, a lot of kings over time have had a court astrologer. Well, a couple of these Ramesses guys, they were their own astrologers. Mm-hmm. They didn't think anybody did it as good as them. And so they not only observed,
right,
but recorded stuff that was then adopted by the Greeks and then adopted by the Romans and then handed down. That's
so so we might conclude, we might theorize, let's put it that way, that these early forefathers or founding fathers, shall we say, of astrology, yes, they observed the stars, but they also observed human behavior as they observed the stars and did the same kind of compare and contrast. Okay, that's where those are. And what's going on with the people?
Not just the people, but also the animals,
mm-hmm,
the crops,
okay,
the droughts, the rains, the natural cycles.
And Native Americans have been doing this for as long as they've been on the planet as well. They may be ancestors. I don't know. I don't know the lineage, but there could be some ancestral link. Obviously, there is for all of us, certainly.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's said that all ancient cultures had their own astronomy and astrology. Yeah. Some had more complex than others.
If you'd like to give us a call and deviate from this scientific discussion, we'll take your phone call at 866-564-1290 or 564-1290, area code 805. If you're listening live on the internet at richarddugan.com, we can take your call at 866-564-1290. If you're local, 564-1290, or you can put the 805 on there, and we will take your phone call. And we will be back right after this.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share. A talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and fast forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
Did you know that chronic stress can lead to premature aging? Are you looking for safe, natural, non-invasive ways to regain youthful vitality?
Now you can experience fast relief without drugs or invasive procedures. Hi, I'm Deepak Chari.
And I'm Dr. Rupa Chari. Welcome to the Chari Center of Health.
At the Chari Center here in Santa Barbara, we offer the most advanced non-invasive technologies for accelerated stress and pain relief.
Our services are affordable and physician-supervised.
Experience leading-edge mind-body technologies to accelerate the release of stress and pain. You can now restore your natural state of health and regain your youthful vitality faster than you ever believed was possible.
At the Chari Center of Health, we take the time to listen to your specific needs.
Go to our website at charicenter.com. That's C-H-A-R-I center.com.
Call now for a limited time introductory discount.
Call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111. Call now.
Keeping all that fear inside. I understand
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I'm here with Beth McDonald, BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. We're taking your phone calls at 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290, or 866-564-1290 if you're listening online at RichardDugan.com or listening to the stream. We also archive these programs and all of this. For some reason, the word ballyhoo came into mind. All of this ballyhoo will be available online following the broad. It may not. I may be discontinued after this. They'll take away my website, and that will be it for me. We're talking about astrology while we're waiting for your phone calls, 866-564-1290 and 805-564-1290. We're talking about the different attributes. Now, we did some defining of terms of Mercury and retrograde and Mercury in retrograde. So tell us, when does it start? When does it end? I'm hoping it's really short.
Yeah. And ooh, that is actually a really good point. This one is a little shorter than the, you know, they're usually about 21 days. Mm-hmm. This next one is a little shorter. It's about 19 days.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Those are the magic 2 days that
will. Well, think about it. You know, I always get, I'm always less pleased, let's say, with the retrogrades when they happen over the holiday season because we're under enough stress as it is. But the upside, and there always is an upside, is the retrograde of Mercury is really all about, when you boil it down, slowing down, disconnecting a little bit from your ambitions and your goals in the material planes, disconnecting from that intellectual part of yourself, and it's really more about connecting. And so when the Mercury retrogrades are happening on the holidays, it can be kind of a recipe for disaster if you don't go into it with the right frame of mind. You really need to go into the holiday seasons in the spirit that they're supposed to be.
So when does this period begin?
Good question. Okay, the Mercury retrograde, Mercury goes retrograde on December 10th. At about 4:04 in the morning Pacific time at 5 degrees Capricorn, and it goes direct on the 29th of December at 19 degrees Sagittarius at about 11 p.m., 11:20 Pacific time.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the first when it goes in. Now, this isn't a situation where the 9th, it's off, and the 10th, it's on.
Yeah,
this
you're
is
right.
A gradual
ramping
increase
up.
And then decrease.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So what's
right.
the apex?
The apex, oddly, they say that you have a 3-week window on either side. It's the window, say if you have a 19-day Mercury retrograde, the prelude period is 19 days before it goes retrograde, and then 19 days afterwards was the echo period afterwards.
Okay.
And this one begins, the ramp up begins on about the 18th of this week. Which is Wednesday?
That would be Wednesday.
Thursday. And that's also the day that Venus goes direct. And, because she's been retrograde for a while. And so Thursday, there will be Thursday is definitely going to be a kind of gear-shifting, energetically sort of a day.
Why do people freak out more over Mercury retrograde than Venus retrograde?
Good question. Two reasons. One is that Mercury rules your mind. And you're thinking, you're more likely to feel nuts during a Mercury retrograde. Venus rules something different. Venus, first it's the category. Mm-hmm. Mercury rules your mind. Venus rules love, relationships, money. So first is the category. Second is the frequency. Mercury goes retrograde because it is the smallest, fastest planet.
Mm-hmm.
It goes retrograde 3 to 4 times a year. Venus goes every 12 to 18 months. So we literally don't have it happen as much. So we're not as plus. So people don't talk about it as much. And what's interesting for me right now is, you know, Venus rules not only money and the valuable objects in our lives, in our world, but it rules our values, and particularly our values about money, our personal relationship with money.
Again, this is Venus.
Okay. And so in the last several weeks that we've had this Venus retrograde, what's dominating the political conversation
right now?
Is
the economy.
Money.
Right.
The economy.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? Who are we going to
get
tax?
Get a paper route, okay?
Yeah. Who are we going to tax?
Oh, wait a minute. Papers are... Anyway.
And what are we going to cut? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's budgeting. It's just budgeting.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to do it.
Now, There's a gentleman who has talked a great deal about the economy, and he asks, I think, a very valid question. I'm going off on a slight tangent here, but he asks an extremely valid question when dealing with this whole issue of the economy and stocks going up and down.
Right.
And then, of course, allegedly the economy is bad, so you know jobs are getting cut, and so on and so on. There's always roughly the same amount of money in the system. Okay, for example, I'll use the analogy of water. On this planet, there is and always will be exactly the same amount of H2O. It's just in what form will it be? Frozen, salt water, fresh water, polluted water, whatever the case may be, but the water does not leave the planet.
Right.
It's always the same amount. So he uses the same analogy with the finances, with, for example, the stock market. He says, if people lost all of this money, where did it go? It didn't just disappear.
Right. You should have Robert Reich on here, or an economist. Mm-hmm. I don't have the answer to that question. I know that those sorts of questions are dominating our conversations right now, as they should. Yeah.
So what if we got rid of mercury? I mean, let's just say, theoretically speaking, hypothetically, fairy tale land, if we got rid of mercury, it probably would screw up the solar system, and that would be the end of us. But, I mean, before they knew that the planets had names, did the astrologers give the planets names? Was it the Greeks or the Latin?
Well, this is, again, where we don't know exactly who started this whole ball rolling.
Yeah.
It is believed that, again, this began in the Neolithic and the Mesolithic age with... And this is a fascinating topic for me. This is one of my favorite things to research on my own, and especially travel and research. Everywhere you go, the ancient peoples, you will find evidence of first cultures, native cultures, aboriginal cultures, marking the movements of the sun and the moon. Stonehenge,
the Mayans, Calamore,
the Mayans,
right?
Chichen Itza. Even I was at one in Phoenix at the Mesa Grand Museum,
Museum.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's, I mean, everywhere you go, people did this, and that's where it started, back before we could really communicate very well, back before we had written communication.
And it kind of makes sense because, as you've already stated, they didn't have TV, they didn't have all of the technological conveniences that we have today. So you're either looking at one another, and after a while that gets boring, so now you're looking up.
Well, and you're also looking to eat.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that most, you know, what I love about this subject is that it's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years old, and there's a gazillion different scholars with very differing opinions on the subject. And it's a lot like Christianity or politics or anything else. There, just within Christianity, there's the Baptists and the Lutherans and the Presbyterians, and they have very differing opinions on this. And so astrologers do too. There's a lot of information, and they really tie it to survival and the quest for food. Noticing that when the sun was in certain places in the sky, it was a good time to plant, or it wasn't, or certain migrations of herds and flocks would come through or go away, and first it was it.
Yeah.
Astrology was, is, I think, and always will be a way to stay connected to the natural world.
I wonder if the almanac, you know, the old farmer's almanac kind of thing, is an sort of an offshoot kind of
to a certain degree, yes, and they do often have very accurate, very helpful to this day astrological information.
I actually saw the 2010-2011 almanac last spring. I was very encouraged, and yet most people were freaked out because we had such cool weather here on the West Coast for month after month after month, and we had those spikes of heat.
Yeah.
Spikes is what they were, and we only had three of them. And yet, if they had bothered to look at the almanac, which, as you
say, it's in there.
It's there.
Yeah.
It says that we're going to have a very mild summer, very cool summer. As a matter of fact, it even says we're going to have a very dry and cold winter. I mean, that's what the almanac says.
Right.
You know, you can roll the dice any way you want.
Right.
Astrology is the study of?
The stars.
Just the
and
study?
The planets.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, originally, you know, again, this is like any science. you build on it over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're standing on the shoulders of the astrologers who came before us, you know.
Does it make any difference what science and astronomy does when they declassify and then reclassify planetary bodies?
Like Pluto.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I felt so sorry and cried for Pluto.
I felt so bad for Pluto. It doesn't change a thing from my perspective.
Right.
Pluto still rules what Pluto rules.
Because the physical structure, the planet, is still there.
Right.
It still has the magnetism it always had.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that it didn't drift off somewhere and pout when the scientists of Earth said, no, it's not a planet anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It doesn't happen that way.
No. But it does. One of the things that I find fascinating is that it does add to the complexity of the stew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, the first real asteroid that people started looking at was discovered in 1977, and it was Chiron. Well, then astrologers started adding Chiron and then the subsequent asteroids to astrology charts. And now you can go get a reading from the people who specialize in that. And not only are there the planets, but there's 12 or 14 other asteroids. And honestly, it the page is just clouded. There's no white space. It's just, it's like, it's way too busy for me.
Right.
But there are people who specialize in that. And then what we discovered was that basically when we had kind of stumbled into the edge of the Kuiper Belt, which is this big asteroid field outside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The edges of our little
solar system. Right.
And there are hundreds and hundreds and thousands of them. And so then in the 90s, when I first started studying astrology formally, the emphasis was kind of coming off the asteroids because we had discovered, you know, there's way more asteroids than planets. And you know, you can really make yourself nuts here. And so, you know, there was a kind of a backlash, I think, a movement to kind of keep some of the more classical approaches and to stay a little focused. Now, some of those other asteroids are very, very helpful. And in a time of crisis, or if someone's really trying to make deep, lasting, easy changes in their life, sometimes those can be helpful to look at. And I'll certainly do that with people. But, you know, I tend to keep it simpler.
Is astrology, and then of course we're talking of Western astrology here.
Right.
Is Western astrology becoming more scientific, as is Eastern astrology, Vedic astrology?
I think there is this merge happening, and I think it's been happening for a long time. It's not happening fast enough for me, but, you know, I think there is definitely a merging happening between the science and I don't want to say the religion, but the faith of
right.
It can be a path, you know, astrology can be a path to so many things. It can be a path to greater connection to God. It can be a path to greater connection to yourself. It can be a path to greater health. It can be a path to greater financial success. But as in any quest or journey you're taking, it's not the only tool in your toolbox.
Right. I find it fascinating the various tools that individuals use, and one person chooses this versus another person choosing that. And again, you know, we all do the same thing. You know, we find the tools that work best for us for whatever application our endeavors are taking us. It's like sound editing software. I still use the same software I've been using since 1994. I've gone with the upgrades and then the sale of it to another company and their subsequent upgrades. But it's still the same program. Well, why don't you try this and try that and try that? I don't want to deal with the learning curve. I'm doing great with this. And then I just found out they just made a beta version for Macs. So if I wanted to go over to Mac, I can now do that. So it's the same kind of thing here. There is an evolution.
A constant evolution.
Constant evolution.
And you choose what you want to play with and participate in. And
so
and
you whatnot. have to go into it, though, accepting that it will evolve. You cannot say, okay, this is the way it is, and this is the way it'll always be. You really have to go into it with,
I think. You know, there are those who will tell you differently, but I do believe in evolution on all levels in all ways, you know, and I don't believe in stagnation. I really believe life is a dynamic force.
There was a thing I was thinking about the other day, and of course we live right here by the Pacific Ocean here on the Central Coast, and And I started musing about the concept of, you know, all of us and our decisions and our choices and the actions that we take are like drops in water. And that each one of us, as we make a decision, as we do something, as another drop in the proverbial pond. And then I'm looking out on the ocean using that metaphor, thinking, which ones are mine? Because when everybody is doing their stuff, my actions feel as though they're getting overrun by the other 7.5 billion people's actions and the ripples. And then you get the stormy seas, you know, kind of thing, where now all of the ripples are starting to just move everything everywhere, which is, of course, an interesting dynamic to look at in and of itself. How does astrology balance the movement of the stars and the planets, the magnetism, the effects of direct and retrograde and so forth, with the individual? I don't want to use biorhythm, because biorhythm is something a little different, but our own electrical field, our own free will and choice, and right, all of those dynamics, if you will, because that's huge.
It's way huge. And one of the things I love about astrology is it kind of gives you a window. You know, though I have to qualify this, different astrologers will tell you differently, but I my favorite analogy for this is one from meteorology, mm-hmm, you know, and the study of weather. When a hurricane is coming, they can't tell you exactly where it's going to land, but they can give you a range of about 350 to 400 miles that they call the cone of uncertainty. And it'll tell you the higher octave and the lower octave. Mm-hmm. It's like, and it'll give you a sense, a general sense. And then what you do with that information is your gig.
Right.
And it's your personal choice. It's your personal responsibility. You bear the consequences of your choices with that information. The kind of Western astrology that I practice is really based on each planet, each sign, each chart has higher applications and lower applications. On a good day, you're going to do that, be like this, and on a bad day, it's going to be like this. And so it gives you a range, and then it gives you a choice, and it also gives you kind of your own personal thermometer.
Okay.
You know, like you and I both have a lot of Gemini. Mm-hmm. Well, Gemini is a very mutable sign. We very much can get washed away by a stronger wave. And so the life lesson for Gemini is to learn when to hold your ground, mm-hmm, and when to give a little, you know, because on this planet, you know, I this is the training planet, I'm quite sure. You know, this is not the upgrade.
2.0
is
not here.
Yeah, it's not here yet. And one of the things I see so much in my practice is people struggle so much with just how do we get along?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And especially the more mutable signs. It's how do I know when I'm being a megalomaniac and when am I being hideously codependent? It's a really, you know, you would think it's a really wide range,
yeah,
but for a lot of us, it ain't.
Yeah. If you've just joined us, I'm Richard Dugan with Beth McDonald, Beth McDonald Consulting.com, BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. We are linked to her website as well. By the way, if you're hearing any additional little clicking sounds, it's not your radio, the paparazzi has invaded the radio station.
A key part of my entourage.
Yes. And I'm glad that you kept your guards and what have you out in the lobby.
Yeah.
Max is your guard.
Actually, he's my chaperone.
And
also,
I have a feeling he's probably asleep on the floor.
Yeah, by his cookie.
Yeah.
So he's sending me vibes and reminding me not to swear.
The way all bodyguards should behave.
But we should acknowledge, yes, my illustrious photographer's name. This is Kim Fisher, who's been a friend and a friend for a long time.
And we're glad to have you here. Thank you so much for coming in. And
thanks, Kim.
And snapping away. And we'll be interested in seeing just exactly what you can do in Photoshop to make us look
groovy.
There you go.
It's all about groovy.
We'd like to take your calls if you would like to give us a call. Beth is here to give you a reading if you'd like. I'm going to ask you a few more questions as we propel ourselves forward. Phone number is 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290, or 866-564-1290 if you're listening outside the area. Wow. On the internet at richarddugan.com. I don't know where that came from, and I'm glad it's gone. People are almost have a sort of a love-hate relationship with astrology, and maybe just in general with metaphysical modalities of, I'll call them divination. Can you kind of shed a little light on that in terms of that kind of aspect of astrology?
Yeah. Well, I think we have a love-hate relationship with anything that confronts us a little bit. You know, astrology shows us where we're strong and where we're vulnerable and gives us an opportunity to shore some things up if we want. And so, you know, that's hard. One of my favorite astrological authors, Liz Green, who's also a psychologist, has this famous quote about how most people can't handle looking at their shadow because they don't believe they could survive the process. Mm. And that's why most of us don't, or don't look for very long.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to wonder, too, if maybe this is part of the reason why, that for some reason we think that we have to share what we find with the rest of the world, even if it's therapy. You know, that we have a therapist and we've got to open up and peel away the layers of the onion, as the metaphor, euphemism goes, to get to the deeper core of who we are. I think that if we sat long enough, I mean, even if I just sat up on off of West Camino Cielo looking out over the ocean and the islands, and I sat there long enough just kind of musing about me and who I am and what makes me tick and not tick and so forth, I could get to those points. But it doesn't mean I have to share it with anybody.
No.
And I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons why. It's because, yes, we're all here together, but that doesn't mean you have to share those kinds of things. If you get in touch with that and you can process it, but that's the other aspect of it too. Sometimes we don't know how to process it.
Right. As you're speaking, I'm reminded of a lot of the Asian philosophies, mm-hmm. The Tao, Buddhism, aspects of Shintoism, where it's very much a part of their culture to cultivate self-awareness and mindfulness. And then it's more about putting it into practice than it is with sharing with the whole world. I think in America, we become very, very delusional that everybody else cares about our personal process.
Well, and I have to tell you
yeah.
that unfortunately that's where Twitter comes in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't tweet, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't
so
either.
You won't be
I do not.
Seeing anything from me about buying a pair of shoes or having a pastrami sandwich for lunch. But let's go to a phone call. Actually, Roger has a couple of questions for
Excellent.
You. And Roger, want to make them quick so that we can move on to our next call as well.
Sure, I've been out on the I've been out in the car running errands on it, so I've only caught some of the discussion. And one part I wanted to ask about.
Go ahead.
You mentioned Beth, either electrical or magnetic, as the means or the mechanism by which astrology or the astronomical bodies influence our own lives. Could you elucidate for me what it is that how they do that?
Actually, no, sir. I'm terribly sorry, but I'm not a physicist. I honestly don't know. All I know is the language of it.
The language of astrology, you mean?
Yes. It's much like a foreign language where all the different glyphs and all the different constellations stand for something. And that's my personal area of expertise.
I would say, Roger, too, that are you familiar with the energy centers of the body called the chakras?
I'm familiar enough with it to know that they don't exist.
Okay, well, and there are those who do say that they do. However, there are those who say that there are only seven, when in fact there are a myriad of them that come from all different points of the body. And this is what they refer to, even in Chinese, ancient Chinese medicine, as the meridians in different parts of the body. And that's how they've divided up the body and so forth. And that is really, Roger, what it comes down to is whether you choose to believe or not believe. There are those who have done the scientific work, but we just don't have them here with us.
Well, a couple of thoughts. First, it's not really, you know, I suppose it is a matter of choosing, but if one wants to choose to believe in meridians and the chakras, whether there's seven or many, one has to do that without any supporting evidence whatsoever. In spite of what you say, there is no evidence of the existence of meridians and chakras. So you're right, it's a choice, but it seems to me it'd be a fool's choice between believing something that there's no evidence for and saying, gee, I'd kind of like to see some evidence of this before I start to invest my life in it.
Well, I appreciate the call. By the same token, I would also offer that there are still people who believe that the Earth is flat. And there is scientific evidence to support that, but they still choose to believe it. And we can't argue beliefs. So, I mean, that's really the bottom line. Beliefs is what you choose to believe. It doesn't require scientific evidence. That's what's always fascinated me about people who want to argue belief, is that they will then start pulling in all of the scientific evidence to support their belief. And I'm going, wait a minute, the scientific evidence is irrelevant. What you believe is what you choose to believe. As a matter of fact, the scientific evidence actually invalidates your belief because it's not a belief anymore. Let's go to our other caller who has asked for a reading. I'm sorry, I forgot. Is this Al?
Al is right.
Oh, I'm not going to say I'm psychic, just a good memory. Go ahead, Al. You're talking with Beth McDonald.
Al, it's so good to hear your voice.
Thanks, Emma. Yeah, you know, I wasn't going to call, but seems not so many folks calling. But yeah, well, I want to ask a question.
Ask a question, Al.
I could do personal or something much broader for everyone.
Whatever makes you happy.
Well, okay, then and I'll be selfish here. You know that I'm in a place now, physically, you know, living in a place.
Yes.
I almost every day I say, what am I doing here? And I know there's a reason, but even you remarked, wow.
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
one of the things that first came to my head when you said that was the planet Venus, which rules relationships.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And now keep in mind, most people, because Venus is the divine feminine archetype, just automatically assume that it's relationships with women or significant other. But, you know, Venus is Venus, and a relationship is a relationship. We have relationships with everything, with ourselves, with God, with the earth. With, like I said, with money, with inanimate objects, you know, with our beloved house pets. So my sense is that, you know, you had spent a lot of time earlier in Japan, and it was in a lot of ways a hermit's journey where you learned a lot about yourself and what makes you tick. And now that you're in the Carolinas, the word I get is integration. You know, a lot of what it looks to me like you're doing now is integrating that information, those epiphanies that you've had, so that you can make choices that are more in alignment with what you really want. And it just feels like it's a lot about relationships and relation building. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Something that I didn't mention to you was that I'm living with my mom.
Oh, there you go.
And that's pretty darn interesting. I know that that's a big chunk of what's going on here. I had a lot of options of places
to
go.
Right,
and I chose this one. I mean, very consciously chose this one.
And so. I truly believe that our generation, you know, we're really pretty close in age. Those of us who are in our 40s and 50s, you know, our parents are fading. And we have limited time. We have really limited time. And what keeps coming back to me lately is listening to all the stories my parents and grandparents told about how they got through the Depression, you know, and those stories are so much more relevant now because we have to go back to caring. You know, we have to go back to caring about our neighbor. We have to go back to learning that stuff all over again. And what a great resource for you to be there.
Well, of course, there's many, many parts to the dynamic, but that's one of them.
The higher octave. It's the higher octave. Focus on the higher octave.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you so much for
calling.
Thank you.
Out.
Thanks, Al. Stay
in
touch.
We'll talk. Okay.
All right. Keep listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Richard.
You're welcome. I have to tell you that it's interesting. We get calls from all kinds of different folks, and I'm very grateful for all of them. I've dealt with all of them, especially when I was working back in Phoenix in the 80s and early 90s. And you have to go with what works for you.
Yes, this is America.
I found it fascinating that when I stopped attending Mass when I was 15, one morning, and I was delivering newspapers at the time, got home, and I was just tired, you know, after early morning, Sunday morning delivering papers. And finally, my mother came in and said, you don't have to go. And I finally asked her about 10 or 15 years after the fact, why did you do that? She says, because I didn't want you to push away from the church. Well, I never did. I just stopped because it didn't serve me in the way that it does those who continue to go, to participate in catechism and the communion and all those, the sacraments and so forth, and the masses. I love going to the holiday masses, maybe midnight mass at Easter, or sunrise mass at Easter, Christmas midnight mass,
yeah.
Easter, Christmas Eve, those kinds of, those special events, those kinds of things, because there's still, I still love the ritual and the ceremony. But then again, I'm not real into some other rituals of celebrating God and so forth that,
right,
that other people are into. And it works for them, but it doesn't work for me. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
It just means, I use the analogy of chocolate cake sitting on the kitchen table. I come home and there it is. And it's perfectly fine. Okay? I just don't want any. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. And I use the same analogy when it comes to people who are having trouble not wanting to associate with others. I said, there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't make them wrong, or other people are having trouble associating with them or wanting to connect with them. Doesn't make you're the chocolate cake. There's nothing wrong with you. They're just not interested today. Tomorrow, they might be.
Right. And that gets back to the lessons of the Greatest Generation. You know,
yeah,
the period before the Great Depression was one of great polarization.
Yeah.
And what we learned when the economy tanked the first time was that that was one of the things that didn't serve us.
Yeah.
And we really needed to look beyond our more petty differences,
yeah,
and find the oneness, find the common unifying threads,
yeah,
and make sure we could work together,
yeah,
so everybody could eat.
Yeah. We received a phone call from Elizabeth, and she wanted to ask you a question regarding her chart in relationship to living here in Santa Barbara and to astrocartography.
Oh, yay.
So if you want, I'm just going to hand this to you.
Okay.
And that's the information. St. Louis Mo.
Okay.
I don't know what other information you needed. If that's not enough, she's listening. She can always
call very back. Good. Very good. Okay. First of all, I don't have the computer with the program here where I could run the map.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, I do believe in astrocartography. Now, for those of you who have not heard of this,
what is astrocartography?
Excellent question. And thank you, Elizabeth, for bringing that up. It is a method that was devised by an astrologer named Jim Lewis, whom I adore, who he devised a way of laying the planet lines, the lines of your chart, around the globe, so that you could see which area of the world the different planets were lined up along at the moment of your birth. And so that you can find out which places are good for you for different purposes. For example, I'm a Gemini. I wanted to be a writer. My Mercury is my ruling planet. Mercury runs through California. I came here to be a writer. And granted, I was born here, but I moved away, but I came back. But
yeah,
it was like I came here,
yeah,
to do that. And my best writing successes have been here.
Well, now I'm a Cancer.
Right. And that's the moon. And so we'd have, again, this is the thing I have to clarify for our listeners who may not know me is I am dyslexic. And without my computer to do the math for me and do these very calculated computations, I am useless.
Okay.
And so,
would you be willing to kind of prepare something that we could then forward to Elizabeth via email?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Great.
Yeah. That would be fantastic. I'd be happy to do that. I do this a lot for people around moving. If they're thinking about moving their home or their business, or if they're thinking about, I see this a lot in relationships where it's like, oh, I've just met this great new gal, but she lives in Milwaukee. Is this going to be a good place for me? Is it going to be better for me to move to where she is? Is it going to be better for her to come here?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a totally separate third place that's going to be good for us?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different astrocartography charts you can run.
Right.
You run yours, you run hers, you run the one for the couples.
Mm-hmm.
You can also look at the one of your solar return and your progress chart. I do that a lot for business people around marketing.
Yeah.
All kinds of fun.
It sounds like it gets really complicated after a while, and it can, but
that's where, you know, through the miracle, that's where technology is a miracle for me, because I can do things I could not do by hand the way the ancients used to do it. I could not do it that way.
Wow. Well, we're fast approaching the end of this program, if you can believe that. Didn't we just get started?
Well, yeah.
It was just 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, two Geminis, man. Yeah.
We will have you back again on a regular basis
to
do our bottom of the hour.
Yeah.
Check in on Mercury in retrograde.
Venus.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah. And then the holidays and the solstice.
The Earth is flat, and I'm jumping off the edge. That's all there is to it. I don't know if I can go through another Mercury in retrograde, but we will survive.
We'll set you up for next time.
We'll
plan better for the next one.
We're going to have you back, but we want people to know that they can get in touch with you through BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Yes.
That's BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. We are linked to you on our website.
Yes.
This program will be available if you want to go back and kind of listen to the things that Beth has shared. In terms of some of the definitions that we talked about at the beginning of the program, I think that it's important to have some of that base information to be able to better understand what this stuff means. I mean, Mercury in retrograde for the next 12 months. What does that mean? Does that mean I should lock myself in the basement until tornado season is over 2013?
Exactly.
Or can I go ahead and walk outside as long as I'm carrying my shotgun? Or it's okay to frolic in the woods naked. I mean,
no Second Amendment remedies.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
okay.
Right. We're not doing that.
Metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
But again, it's just one of those things where I think that it helps us to better understand. And even when we've talked with David Hawthorne, who was our Vedic astrologer.
Yeah, love him.
We lay out the map and we tell you, as you said, like the hurricane, a 300-mile
radius
cone of
uncertainty.
And we're going to be going into the cone of silence in about a minute here with this program.
Thank you for having me, Richard. I really love it.
It has been a lot of fun, and I feel a little bit better educated as far as at least Mercury, and we'll kind of start preparing starting Thursday, the 18th of November.
Yep.
And
under schedule.
Slow down. That's a new word, under schedule.
I made it up.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. And we're also going to work on another concept that I think I came up with the word. You and I have talked about this off air. Interdependentism.
Okay? Yeah.
You think about that. We'll be defining it over the course of the next couple of programs.
Stephen Covey, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
He talks about
interdependence, but I haven't heard the interdependence-ism. That's fantastic.
I will define it. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, love.